we want to start to uncover the lies in the truth movement that we've been seeing. So there are many presentations out there, a few of which that Andrew himself has done. So we're not going to go over and do a full in-depth presentation of all the evidence about from Judy Wood's book. We're not going to go completely into that because you can go see those other shows, and we'll put some links in the slides as well so you can go and get some background information. So we're going to do a brief overview and really take advantage of the fact that Andrew is here with us today and share some of our experiences as well. So let's go ahead and dive right in and get started. All right, so what I'd like to do in the beginning is we're going to just talk about our personal testimony a little bit here. Now, for me, for anybody that doesn't know, I actually grew up in New York City. That's the place where I was born and where I lived for most of my childhood life. So when September 11th happened, it literally hit home for me. That was my view from my bedroom window. And I, at that point in time, I was in college and I was not aware of free energy technology. All of that was completely unknown to me. So I basically went through the experience that most people went through, where I was horrified and I saw what happened on the news, and I bought the official story because what else did I know? I was listening to what they were telling me on mainstream. I still thought they were telling the truth on the news back then. But it's really not about me and my experience. What I really want to do briefly is I want to bring out Tavon's testimony, because I think he's got some really important things that people in our audience would like to know. So Tavon, you come from a military family. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And at the time of 9/11, you were actually serving in the Navy.
Yes.
And you were serving for about 6 years or so. So you spent some good time serving in the Navy. And before we go into your experience on that day, you told me once that your father had said something to you, just, you know, when you grow up in that environment, you are raised with a certain knowledge,
yes,
you know, that's passed on from your family. Yes. And your father being military as well, he had said something very interesting to you about the security of our airspace.
Yes.
In America. And what was that?
Well, I mean, in the family, I think I had it maybe 10 years old. But during that time, we're talking in the, mid-80s. Late '80s. There's always a sense of Cold War, and my dad, he was a Vietnam vet. But by that time, he had already left the military, but he was working as a contractor. And, he commuted in Washington DC. So, you know, that whole area is full of contractors, full of people who are, you know, military personnel working for the government in some capacity. But what I remember him telling me was, because of the threat of the Cold War, was that if there was ever some kind of, you know, ballistic attack or, you know, something from the air, that basically, particularly he mentioned the Pentagon, and that whole area was just fortified with weaponry, anti-aircraft weaponry.
Right. So the idea of some rogue plane just happening to
just wouldn't happen.
Fly into a building without anybody doing anything about it is completely laughable.
Yeah.
Because there are weapons pointed at the sky all over the place in America. So that story, that's what you knew.
Yeah.
That was your baseline of information. So then let's move forward to the actual day of 9/11. Now everybody has a story. Everybody remembers where they were when they heard the news. Where were you on the morning of September 11th?
Well, I mean, on that morning, I was doing my job. We were working in Crystal City.
Right. So you were on your job in Crystal City. Where's Crystal City?
It's in Alexandria. So if you look on the map, it's right across from the Pentagon. It's right on the outskirts of Washington D.C. You have an overpass, and on the other side of the overpass from the Pentagon, you have Crystal City.
Right. So you were right there on the job, and Now, here's the thing, and this, and I'll never forget when you told me this story. This was the moment when you saw something that changed your life, really. It was that yeah. moment where you were like, I know I'm being lied to, or, well, so what did you see, and what did, how did it affect you?
Well, when this whole event was going on, where we were working, we came out into the parking lot from where we were working because we weren't sure what was going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point, the Pentagon had already been hit. And where we were, we couldn't actually see the Pentagon, but we could see the plumes of smoke and basically burning paper coming down from the explosion that happened across on the other side of the overpass. So as calamity as mayhem, everyone trying to get on the, you know, on the beltway, trying to get out of Crystal City. But, we were, you know, we're just basically waiting in our cars with the radios turned on, probably like there, like millions of Americans on that day. And, you know, do you remember when on the news, on the radio, we're getting news of the plane that was flying over Pennsylvania? And about, what, 25, 30 minutes after that, from where we were, we saw a F-16 go afterburn due north above us.
Wow.
About another half, when afterburn above us, we all looked at each other and asked each other, we wonder where that's going.
And then later on you found out.
Well, we didn't find out, but it was just listening to the radio another 30, 35 minutes later. You get news of the plane crash that was in Pennsylvania, that the plane had crashed.
Yeah. So, excuse me. If anybody's ever, it was an F-16. If anybody has ever actually been standing on the ground and heard an F-16 fly over you, it sounds like the earth is ready to blow up. The sound is deafeningly loud.
Yeah.
So it's a moment you won't forget. You saw the F-16 going, and then later on you heard that the other plane had crashed. But there was a moment when you just were like,
the parking lot, everyone was silent.
Everybody was silent. That awkward moment when you know something's going on and you're not buying the story. And we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there because everybody's got different stories that were around the area. And it's a very, very, very emotional story for a lot of people. But what we're going to talk about today is something that really rocked my world when I first saw some of these presentations. And if you can, please pick up Dr. Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? Because it's absolutely incredible, the evidence that is in this book. You're told one story, but then you look and you see there's a whole lot of other stuff going on that day. So let's go ahead and we're going to move through a few of these slides here. And once again, Andrew Johnston, who's on this call with us, we'll bring him in a little bit. He has been so kind as to let us use a lot of his slides for several of our shows. We've used a lot of his slides from his research at ChuckTheEvans.com. But first, let's just go over a couple of our vocab terms for today.
Okay, right. So the free energy vocabulary for today is thermite. Is a non-explosive pyrotechnic composition of rust powder and aluminum powder, but it could be another metal that's used, that when ignited by heat undergoes an exothermic redox reaction. The focused burst of high temperature in a small area makes it ideal for applications like metal cutting, welding, and or purification, you know, to name a few. And that's basically that for thermite. It's going to be important. Just remember that this word because it's used quite a bit and the whole, and as an explanation for what was occurring on 9/11.
Mm-hmm. And we also have, the Hutchison effect, another one of our vocab terms. It's a noun. It was discovered by accident in 1979 by the inventor John Hutchison, whereby a complex high voltage electromagnetic and electrostatic fields combine in a region-based as to create anomalous effects on materials within. So we're talking about like a cross.
Yes.
You know, you got a couple different things going on at the same time, and where they meet in the middle, these interesting things happen.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And we've gone through a lot of that in some of our previous shows as far as microwave technology and our electronic harassment show.
Yes,
you might want to check that out too for some more info. The effects observed include inertial levitation, transmutation, jellification, and embrittlement of metals. We do have some fascinating clips that we're going to show so you can see with your own eyes some of the weird things that happen to metal that when they're undergoing these different different effects here. So let's talk a little bit about John Hutchison, the inventor.
Okay. So John Hutchison, he's a Canadian inventor who in 1979 discovered the Hutchison effect. When John's Tesla coils, electrostatic generator, and other equipment created this complex electromagnetic field, heavy pieces of metal levitated and shot toward the ceiling. Some of these pieces also shredded. Upon analysis through investigation, the Canadian government dubbed this phenomenon the Hutchison effect. And basically, on this next slide, it's just another a photograph on the upper left showing John Hutchison with his equipment. He used a combination of his Tesla coils, military equipment that he got from scrap yards and salvage, electrostatic generators, and he basically turned his apartment into like this RF laboratory.
Wow.
And so he was basically throwing all kinds of fields around initially, to the point where now he was at towards the end of that phase of his research, he was able to actually control some of these effects. The picture on to the upper right is just showing a basic concept that in this case it's just two transmitters, two Tesla coils acting as transmitters. But if you have multiple transmitters and you mix and match these fields, you can get these anomalous things to occur. And that's what this diagram is showing with this piece of metal in that region of space where these transmitters intersect. And at the bottom, there are three photographs. And these photographs basically show John's evidence of what fields can do to metal, which are very anomalous. It's interesting to look at. So
now the important the reason why we're bringing John Hutchison into today's free energy show is because there's so many correlations between his work and some of the effects that we have discovered, or that Judy Wood discovered through her evidence and research in her book. So rather than going on too much longer, let's actually roll a clip now. This clip is from the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference when Dr. Judy Wood got up and she gave a presentation talking about these effects, and she showed some fabulous clips that show the actual John Hutchison effects and how we see a lot of these same effects in different areas of the 9/11 tragedy. So, Biggie, go ahead and run that clip.
Well, let's look at how John Hutchison's more of work here. This is an iron block. It's 2 inches by 2 inches by 7 inches tall, solid iron block. And when he puts it in his system, it buckles over, and you can see some fuming here. And it actually is colder to the touch at the end of this. And here we get to see it happen, and we're going to compare it to the fuming door handles from 9/11. The door handle.
It's a cold process.
Yep, it's a cold process. Solid iron. And this fuming, which is interesting. You know, the car window is broken open here. Now here's John's boat experiment. Well, what it shows is when he turns off his gizmo, then the boat lights up with weird fires. And the car's lit up right after the tower's demise. Not during, right after. As though it was right after something got turned off. This is another interesting, you know, at the WTC, how this beam curled up. Actually, that was right across the street. That was the Banker's Trust. These are John Hutchison samples. Notice there's no creases in the corners. I should have found the picture of holding this one like this. Yeah. Vitamins? But it curls up like that, like at room temperature. And this is a video that hopefully will run. There we go. It wiggles back and forth. Now watch this thing. It's going to come apart in here. It's starting to come apart. Weird things happen. Some other weird things that happened were roundish holes in the outer pane of windows. They weren't necessarily through both panes. That's strange. Throw a rock through a window, it breaks the window because the window is brittle and it bends and brittle materials are weak in tension, so it shatters the glass. So how do you get a round hole without cracks running out? Turns out somebody replicated that very thing. This is my analogy saying, okay, if you drop a rock in a pond, it ripples outwards. Maybe something like that is what ripples outwards with longitudinal waves that causes the glass to break in a rounded pattern. Now let's think about hurricanes. What do they do? Well, Hurricane Andrew drove this two before through a tree. Piece of plywood. And with tornadoes, I'm sure you've all heard about straw through trees. It's not because they're flying fast. Something weird is going on. There's John Hutchison's sample with a butter knife and a piece of aluminum. He also has one with wood in the aluminum. If the aluminum's hot enough to melt, the wood would have burned up. So it's strange. Now, when I found these, you can see the blow-ups. I wondered, why on earth would the car door be peeling split thickness? It's not a laminated structure. Didn't know what that meant, but it was definitely a category of data, and I put it aside. Later, when I found John Hutchison's work, wow, he can peel open extruded aluminum. That's not laminated, it's extruded. And we have these coins from the World Trade Center. People like to say they're melted together. I point out that zinc melts before copper does. It also boils before copper melts. So that would likely explode. But it's one of the lowest, zinc is one of the lowest melting point materials. So what gives? Why is this stuff stuck together? And this is the only surviving file cabinet. It's from Ben and Jerry's ice cream store. Here's the piece of wood embedded in the aluminum from John Hutchison's work without elevated temperature. Same with these. WTC-6 with these cylindrical holes in it. Well, here's John Hutchison's aluminum sample with cylindrical holes in it. It's as though there's a pencil line in space around which material at the same radius is dustified. And if you had a lot of those vertically here, you would end up with dustified cylindrical columns. But there's no way you could get a drill in there and turn it sideways. It's parallel to the surface, And it just starts right here. The end of this bar is solid. Let's look at some other similarities with hurricanes. Kind of like a big Tesla coil. And come to think of it, ahead of a storm system, people feel the storm coming. Birds know to head for cover. You can feel the static field ahead of the storm. Here's another thing about storm systems. I don't know if this needs a click or not. This is from this past spring in Texas, where there's a bunch of tornadoes and hit flying trucks.
As it went across a transport company, trees flying through the air, semi, the trailers, there you go, a couple of semi, look at that, the beds of the trailers hurling, twirling around in the sky and then dropping down from at least 50 feet high down into the ground. We saw trees, there goes another semi.
And it's spinning.
It's spinning, down it comes, bang, lands on its nose right down at the ground. Big piece of a tree there that just got hurled up, I believe it was. So certainly we have seen a destructive tornado on the south side of Dallas, still within parts of the area near south of Grapevine, north of Arlington, a possible tornado in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, as well as over on the east side of Dallas, in toward the area around the Mesquite area, just to the west of Mesquite and east of Dallas.
Those are flying trucks. I would say that's anti-gravity.
All right, we're back. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit, just show some pictures here about dustification, toasted cars.
Yes.
Some of these fascinating effects that have been brought out in Dr. Judy Wood's research. So here we've got just a few slides here. And the question here is, what technology can do something like this? You'll see this picture, and we'll show a video in a little bit that shows you some of the live footage, once again from Dr. Judy Wood's presentation. But look here how you've got this very solid structure mm-hmm. on the left, in the picture on the left, and then time lapse, you go through, and all of a sudden you can literally see this turn to dust. Poof. Right in front of your eyes. So the question is, what kind of technology can do something like that? Got a few more pictures for you. Want to talk about this?
So from this picture, it shows the rubble. Not only that, well, we're looking at the speed at which these towers fell at free fall speed. But also the footprint, the pile that it leaves behind, or lack of pile that is left behind. Yeah, that's what we have here. And it's comparing it to the original towers as they once stood, these two photographs. So, again, where did the towers go?
Yeah, where did they go? So these are some of the highlights. And I really do recommend that you read the book and take a look at some of her presentations and Andrew's presentations as well, because they really go very much in depth, and we'll give you links at the end of this presentation so you can go and find out more.
Yes.
So the buildings are gone. There's no appreciable heat. Unburned paper littered in the streets. That's something very interesting. People levitated but not burned by the dust cloud. There's no bright flashes seen as the towers came down. The key point is, what technology can do this kind of destruction with little or no observable heat generated? All right, here's some pictures of the dust. Everybody remembers this dust. Tons of dust everywhere, except for the paper. The paper wasn't burned. Then we had these toasted cars. This was an interesting phenomenon. There were these cars that were just blowing up, catching on fire, but not really. They were like weird fires.
Yes.
Strange effects going on. Once again, we'll show a clip in a second that'll explain this a little bit better. And then the raging car fires and the papers not burning. So if you don't know about free energy technology and microwaves and a whole bunch of the stuff that we've been going over in these shows, you wouldn't understand what these effects are. But if you do know about this type of technology, then it would probably make perfect sense as to what might have been actually going on. And again, Dr. Judy Wood in her presentation, in her book, she doesn't want to go into theories. She doesn't want to go and just talk about the planes at all. All she wants to do is present the evidence of what happened.
That's right.
Right? So we're just looking at these things, and we're trying to bring everybody back to a place of critical thinking, problem solving, thinking for yourself, and not just listening to some story somebody else told you, but to look at the facts for yourself and try to figure out what might have been going on and just allow yourself to be open to new information.
Yes.
This is very controversial, and we'll get into why in a little bit. But for now, we're going to run one more clip for you. This, again, is from the same Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference. This is Dr. Judy Wood talking about dustification and then later on about toasted cars on 9/11. So, Biggie, go ahead and run that clip.
Now, this is slow motion of Tower 1 coming apart. And you notice this, there'll be some column that starts falling down this corner. I think it's in here. And we're going to follow it down and watch how it just turns to dust completely. And as well as these other things. Here it is. Okay, it's got the dust trailing behind it. This is a solid piece. It's like ice cream melting. It's going away. And if you focus on various other parts, you'll see the same thing. There's no sound with this. This is a high-speed version. You can see that piece again. And these big chunks over here. So you see it's turning to dust as it comes down. And we're going to go look down on the ground right next to where this was coming down. This is the Verizon building here. Whoops, right here. And we're going to look at the corner right below there. That's the Verizon building right there. This is that intersection where that material was falling. Right after everything settled, these people who were hiding come out of their hiding places. And they're probably in awe. There's, you know, no building here. You can see sky. Looking at the body language, the guy with his hands on his hips, arms folded, arms that said, they're probably in total amazement and shock and just bewildered. I call this picture the Twilight Zone because they probably felt like they just walked into the Twilight Zone. A bunch of cars went into spontaneous combustion, apparent spontaneous combustion up here with a sea of unburned paper in between. And here is that toasted car lot. But we're going to look at various directions of watching this dustification. There's a cluster of core columns that remains here. Watch what happens to them. They just faint. I believe that's the upper part of where those firefighters survived in Stairwell B. Those are core columns. This is another one. See how it peels away like a banana? And you see this clear air around it. Some folks like to say dust settled on it. Well, dust can't settle on something like that fast without seeing it. And there's from across the river, you can see those two. And then there's a sequence from the northern view. And, you know, my detractors like to say, oh, it fell over. And because the dust was so fine, it hung in the air. Well, if the dust is so fine, it hung in the air, how could it be settled instantly? on these vertical columns. We saw it was peeled away like a banana. But it comes a point where it's no longer a crisp boundary and just turns to dust. I call it dustification. I mean, where have we seen it before? It goes one more round. But you're told to see a collapse, so you tune that out. You can see all of this is frothing up into dust. That part. And it's also blowing downward. Very clean edges. So it isn't like dust was settling on it. And this video is of Building 7, the north face. But notice it's one face and one face only that has this lather pouring out of it.
No, no. Go low to the corner. Hold on.
Notice it's spiraling around. And if it was smoke from a fire and it really needed to get out, why isn't it coming out these windows? If there's a traffic jam, you know, why does it take the path of least resistance? The wind that day was 7 or 8 miles an hour.
No, no. Go low to the corner. Hold on.
It's history. This is a police car found on FDR Drive. I don't know how it got to, I don't know where it was toasted. There were some that were witnessed as being toasted on FDR Drive. But this one is quite interesting in that it has an abrupt, you know, toasted, not toasted. Like it's like it's on the showroom floor. It just had a new wax job back there. What abruptly stops? A real fire, a regular fire, doesn't do that. It would be lapping around the corner. Also, why aren't the lights melted? And you have the circular spot on the other side. Gas tank is still, you know, fine. This is where all the toasted cars we're seeing that I'm aware of, as well as the toasted car lot. And the ones we were looking at were down here. And an emergency medical person said you could tell it was hot at the Trade Center because you could feel the heat from the bridge. But paper wasn't burning down here. How could somebody over here, 3/4 miles away, feel heat? Something that they perceived as heat.
And you said you saw melted tour buses, melted cars?
The cars that were right down there, it was just unbelievable. They were twisted and melted into nothing. The debris is just unbelievable. And then you can see fire trucks and police vehicles that were down there early that all their windows, the windshield are completely blown out from, must have been from when debris dropped.
But even more jarring, I think, is this scene right here. Look at these two cars placed on top of one another. I think when you think about the impact that these planes must have had, it's hard to visualize.
I don't know what to say.
Because everything melted. But here, at least you have some remnants. You have literally an engine that is melded together with other parts of the car. Moving over, you've got another car they moved here. It looks like it's been through a war. You can see the papers, all the...
Paper.
Burned out papers from the building. You see the soot and the dirt, and it just shows you how devastating this blast was. Look across the street there. You've got a Con Ed truck that, you know, some of the Con Ed people now looking at, examining, trying to figure out which truck that actually was. But that truck too, in terrible shape. So while many of the items, the steel, was literally melted.
People who have been right down next to the base of what was the trade towers say there's virtually nothing.
Yes, we'll stop here on this toasted bus picture. And realize there's no burnt marks, no scorch marks.
All right. So we've got a mindset that has been created.
Yes. So through all of this, it appears to be a mindset indeed has been created. A large part of the cover-up has been the creation of a mindset view which says that basically free energy systems are indeed impossible.
Especially in science, which dictates reality, and we went through some of that earlier in some of our shows, to everyone else. Once the mindset has been created, the cover-up is easy because the majority of people automatically reject any evidence shown to them.
So this shows how a mindset creates reality. I.e., we don't have large-scale use of free energy technology, even though we know it's possible.
And the same mindset applies to a lot of other things like safe, cheap, non-toxic treatments and cures for cancer. So without any further ado, let's bring on our incredibly special guest. So we have with us today Andrew Johnson, who has a fantastic website called checktheevidence.com. And just to introduce you, I want to let everybody know that Tavon and I, it's our opinion that Andrew is the best researcher in free energy that we've ever seen. And we mean that.
Andrew
doesn't, he says, I don't know about that, but we've watched them all. We've watched all these different videos. We've been sitting in front of the YouTube screens for hours. And of all the information we've seen out there, Andrew Johnson, his stuff really rings the most true to our personal experience. So, Andrew, say hello, and thanks for coming and joining us today for this fabulous conversation. Wait, you're muted, Andrew. Big queen. There you go.
Yeah, thank you. That's a wonderful introduction. That's, I think, probably the best I've had. And you've made my life very easy. I've just been sat in the chair here watching all these slides, and they, fab. You've done all the work. I'm very impressed. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been interesting. We're gonna get into some conversations here because Andrew, you've been around. You've been looking into it. So let's start with what made you start to investigate September 11th and what happened there?
That actually happened around about late 2003, early 2004. Even before that, we take a step before that. I think when I first got an internet connection back in about 1996, when I first got dial-up, first thing I researched was cold fusion. I hadn't heard of it for a few years, and I thought, well, let's see what this internet thing has got about cold fusion. But then later, 2003, we got broadband. I then found out about Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, following watching a TV program about the Bentwaters Base incident, which happened in 1980, where they had two landings, RAF. A US AF base in Britain. And then I found the Disclosure Project and all that stuff there. And then, of course, that was the first time I'd heard the energy issue connected to the UFO issue. I'd never heard of them two connected. And Greer, said that this was part of the reason for the cover-up. And I thought, well, yeah, I think he's probably right because, I've had four UFO sightings, and it's clear to anyone that studies that evidence that these craft are coming here. Some of them have landed in the past. They don't run on gas. They don't run on oil, coal. They don't run on sort of nuclear energy. They clearly run on some different type of technology. And, some people don't believe everything that Colonel Corso says from his book Day After Roswell. But if you read that book, you get some kind of inkling that it seems pretty clear that some of this technology was recovered and they did manage to successfully reverse engineer it. But then again, as you've already covered in the introduction, I think some of those effects and technologies were discovered independently by Tesla, Stubblefield, and T. Henry Moray, and all these other people. So it wasn't, not all the advanced technology has been back engineered from crashed flying saucers. You know, it's come from else, it's come from other people's own research as well.
Excellent. What about Dr. Judy Wood? How did you first get to know her?
Yeah, well, that came a bit later because, as I say, investigated 9/11 investigation of that for me began in around about early 2004, mid 2004. By late 2004, I knew the official story must be false, and that my knowledge of that essentially came from, I thought at that time, and I have to admit this, I've admitted it before in many interviews, I thought that somebody put bombs in the building, blown the towers up. And therefore, that was clearly to me, it was obvious that they couldn't have fallen down from gravity and plane crashes. Knew it was false. I then started putting out this little equation, the equations of motion. You can derive the free fall time from that. And put that out on a physics forum to see if anybody had any comments about this simple little equation. You know, it's like a high school level equation if you do it. And did anyone have any comments? What was wrong with this? And about, I think, 5,000 or 6,000 responses later on this thread on a physics forum, after a year and a half, nobody had really found anything wrong with this thing. Then we go to the end of 2005. I was then invited to join this group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which was formed by Jim Fetzer and Stephen E. Jones. Jim Fetzer is a prolific blogger, and he's does many interviews on various topics. He's gone off 9/11 a bit now, and he's been doing Sandy Hook and other things. Stephen E. Jones, he was a physicist, or is a physicist, from Brigham Young University, and he wrote this paper called Why Indeed Did the World Trade Center Towers Collapse, which I read an early version of because he was sent round to the members of the scholars group, and he published that on Journal of 9/11 Studies. And if you take the initials of that, Journal of 9/11 Studies, that actually spells Jones, which was rather interesting.
that is interesting.
And he published that on there. You know, I thought this guy was kosher, and I printed out loads of copies on my printer and made little booklets, and I gave them out to people. I thought, yeah, we've got some academics here, you know, we're going to get going on this now, and people are going to wake up, and people are going to take notice, and, you know, we're going to sort this out now. And they wrote some press releases, so forth. And I've written a lot of this up in my free ebook, 9/11 Finding the Truth, which you can download from my website free, and I think it's been reposted elsewhere. And there are also, I think, 32 audio chapters, which somebody read out for me, so they've read the whole thing. Cindy Laverty from Idaho, she read that all out for me, and so that's available to download if you want to listen to it while you're driving around the place or cycling on your bike or walking the dog or whatever. The scholars group, Jones asked, well, didn't ask me, Jones asked for some help with some video editing, Stephen E. Jones, and he wanted to edit together two clips from 9/11 with this, what he alleged with this thermite reaction, which was triggering the destruction of the towers. That's what he alleged in his paper. And I volunteered to edit these two clips together because I got the software to download, you know, and this sort of thing. And I sent him this clip. And then he later sent me his PowerPoint presentation, and I made it into a video, and I put it on Google Video for him, and I made a DVD, and I gave a few of those out. And that we're talking there sort of early 2006, February 2006, March 2006, that sort of time frame. 10 years ago, a whole decade ago now.
Yeah. You know? Wow.
Yeah.
We're going to ask you, by the way, after you're done with this, we're going to ask you to really unpack the thermite story in general. Sure. So I want to let you know. So keep going.
Okay. So I had assumed this guy was legit. And then I was on this scholars forum, which Stephen E. Jones had set up. And curiously, it was a bit strange because he'd set this forum up on his, I think he had this forum about archaeometry, which is using physics and archaeology together to make measurements of the age of artifacts and this sort of thing. Because apparently he had this thread of research where he wanted to prove that Jesus had visited the American continent or something. I can't remember if I've got that right, but that was something that was on this forum that he was a member of. And then he set up a sub 9/11 forum, and he put all the scholars onto that. So it was interesting that he essentially funneled the discussion into this area that he essentially was in control of. So that, I suppose, was, in retrospect, was quite interesting. So we're posting stuff on there, and then I heard about this person called Dr. Judy Wood, and I heard about Dr. Morgan Reynolds, and there were various snide remarks made about them in these forum posts. And so I was quite neutral about it. I didn't immediately sort of say, oh, well, they must be just idiots or something or anything. I hadn't really studied what they put out, so I didn't pass judgment on it. And then Morgan Reynolds, who I was sort of somewhat in awe of, because I know that he used to work for the Bush government. Morgan Reynolds was an economist in the Bush the 2000 Bush administration for 18 months, I think it was, or 16 months. And so I was a bit in awe of that. This guy that had worked in the Bush administration, I think it was in the Department of Labor, he worked as an economist. And he mentioned my name in this article that he'd written about. It was originally called "What's Wrong with Jones," because they started to question what Jones was doing. This forum and excluding discussion of certain topics. And I'd seen on this forum that they were not happy about talking about the destruction of the buildings, which to me was the most obvious thing, which proved the official story was false. You talk about surviving passports and surviving heart attacks and all that stuff, but for me, if you just look at the destruction, even at that point, although I thought it was bombs, to me it was still the most obvious way to prove that the official story was false. And then I found out that Dr. Judy Wood had done this billiard ball example, which was like a simple example, and that is called an example for a reason. It's not a model. It's not meant to model what happened to the towers. It's meant to make you think of a process which you can, take in a neutral way, because it's about billiard balls. It's not about, skyscrapers being destroyed on a horrible day. And she showed this example of billiard balls going down, and it was a bit like a more illustrative example of this free-fall calculation, which I'd done. So it's more elegant, really. And she had a lot more experience in that area than I did. And anyway, they mentioned my name in this article about Jones, and they pointed out that Jones had asked me to edit these video clips together. And so then I realized that for some reason that was important enough for them to write about it. So I started reading. I think it was a bit, they've mentioned me. I'll go and read their stuff, Up until that point, I hadn't really read anything. They've actually mentioned my name. I'm more interested now, So it's kind of that. And I think I sent an email to Morgan Reynolds and said, I did edit those clips together. That is true. I did, but I didn't. I thought he was doing it for legitimate reasons, And then I think it was I think it was late 2006 or early. Yeah, I think it was late 2006. Another guy somehow got in touch with me through my website or something. Can't even remember, a guy called Frank Ferguson, who's lived in Washington. And he suggested that Judy and I talk to each other. And I can't even remember how or why he said this. But he was the guy that brought myself and Dr. Judy Wood together by phone initially, because she was actually staying at his house. And she went and did some shows on the Ambrose Lane show in Washington, D.C., which was a local – Ambrose Lane had a local show which focused on, current affairs and things and other challenging topics. And Dr. Wood went on Ambrose Lane's show in October 2006. And she laid out some of the evidence there that she got up to at that point. She'd already been looking at it for 5 years by then. She was looking at it from day one, but she hadn't really posted much on the internet. She started to post stuff on the internet on 2004. So that was before the scholars group had started. But that was on a free website, and the free websites had too many ads and stuff, and the website was a bit awkward and blah, blah, blah. So then early 2007, this is when this debunking started to really kick off in earnest, because Fetzer had essentially ejected Wood and Reynolds from the scholars group in, I think, around about June, July 2006. So they were essentially, you know, persona non grata at that point to the scholars group. But they got together and they did some articles, one or two articles, one of which was the Jones article, and then Morgan Reynolds did one called We Have Some Holes in the Plane Stories, where he's talking about the plane crashes and how that didn't really add up. And the scholars group, they didn't like that. And Dr. Wood was talking about the effects on the buildings and so forth. And you can still see that original paper, which I think was last updated in October 2006, which is like I've printed out many booklets of this. It's about 40 pages long. And it's kind of like a little primer for where did the towers go. It's kind of like an early sort of embryonic form of where did the towers go, just in 40 pages. With some of the pictures and stuff. And so I really started to get into it at that point. And then I found out that Dr. Wood had been to Washington, D.C. with Jim Fetzer. And at that meeting with Jim Fetzer, where he spoke, this was in January the 4th, 2007, if I remember the date correctly, I think it was around then, Fetzer had decided to back Dr. Judy Wood, and he split from Jones. He was a bit sort of nasty to Jones, and they had this sort of fake, you know, food fight. I've got that show on my website. You can hear them, you know, slagging each other off, and it's also fake. You know, you can tell at the time when I heard this, I thought, this is not right. I can tell they're arguing. There's something going on here. It's not just an argument. This is, you know, I couldn't quite crystallize it in my mind as to what it actually was. That became clear later when I realized that both Fetzer and Jones were trolls. You know, they were off. I didn't really realize that until I think after I started talking to Dr. Woodmore, and she'd been through a lot of background stuff about what happened with her and Fetzer, and you know, it's just horrendous.
I want to really interrupt you for 1 second. I just wanted to highlight the importance of all of this background story to our listeners, because what we're showing here is we are uncovering all of the inner politics and the nastiness that goes on in these groups with these experts and these people that think they know everything. And you, Andrew, you just walked into this situation trying to learn what the truth was.
Right.
So, and looking for evidence and looking for truth, and you weren't, you know, interested in all these politics. And this is the situation a lot of people are in that are looking into free energy and things along those lines. So it's interesting. It's interesting what you were discovering while you were just observing the behavior of other peoples, which is what we have really tried to highlight in these shows. And I was wondering if you could segue now a little bit into the thermite story, if you don't mind. Because I wouldn't know what thermite is. I had no idea, and I wasn't involved with these 9/11 truth archetype groups and all these politics. I was just an average person. Mm-hmm. So would you mind explaining what the thermite story was?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely get into that. But it's just you know, I'm accused of to finish off about the groups.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It is. There's a lot of this squabbling, and you think, well, why am I even bothering to talk about this? Why can't I just talk about the evidence? And what I found is that the way that the squabbling was going on and the sorts of tactics, that itself became a form of evidence, not so much physical evidence, but psychological evidence to unpin how, you know, you showed that slide about me creating a mindset, not me creating a mindset, but that I'd done, the slide that I'd done about how a mindset's created. Mm-hmm. And this squabbling and bickering and infighting, that's all part of the perception management. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why I chose to write about it. And it's very long and tortuous and detailed. And I'm actually, frankly, quite surprised that anybody in the whole world has actually read my book, because it's painful, so painful. It's like sitting on a chair of drawing pins. You know? people have done it, and I applaud them. But going into the thermite story, so Jones was pushing this. Thermite, what is thermite? As you said, you had the slide there. That was pretty accurate. Thermite is a mixture of two substances. Typically, you mix iron oxide with another with aluminium, for example, that's a typical one. It could be copper oxide and aluminium. That's another form of thermite, but iron oxide is a common one. And aluminium is a group three element, so it has a valency of three. And I knew this because of chemistry. I did chemistry up to A level in the UK, so I didn't do it in university, but I'm fairly familiar with sort of a good level of chemistry. And the aluminium will take the oxygen from the iron if you heat it up enough, and then you get the iron oxide turning into iron after the reaction. So you get molten iron and you get aluminium oxide, and it's a very, very hot reaction. So it's an enormous blue, enormous yellow flame, and very hot. It can melt through engine blocks. It can melt through steel. It's used, as you said, for welding. They use it for welding rails, typically. That's one of the things they use it for. You set up a guide and put thermite in it, set it going, it will weld the rails together. It's just a welding material. It's used for welding. It's not used for controlled demolition. It never has been. And as you quite rightly said, it is an incendiary. It's not an explosive. It doesn't explode on its own. You could add other things to it. You know, if you put water on it, it'll explode, or some other liquid, it'll probably explode. But on its own, it does not explode. So then they changed that story. And after that, it was pointed out by, I think, you know, people like Morgan Reynolds and others. They changed the story and said it wasn't thermite, it was nanothermite. So it's actually ground into a fine powder, and that's what made it explode. You know, and then Jones came out a bit later and he said, well, actually, I think that the columns in the towers were painted with thermite. So we had paint on thermite. And then we had, well, it didn't do something else, so they changed it to thermate. So it was nanothermate. And then it was iron-rich microspheres found in the rubble. And then it was these red chips found in the rubble. And they had all these variants. But the problem with all these variants is it does not explain what was seen. Yes, it's true. We have a couple of video clips, maybe three, I think now, of this glowing material coming out of the corner of one of the towers. And I edited two of these clips together for Jones at his request. Yes, there's a little bit coming out, this orangey yellow material dripping down. And people will point to this and say, yes, you know, that proves that it was thermite. No, it doesn't prove it was thermite. It could have been something else. We don't really know what that was. It could have, you also quite rightly talked about the gelification of metals in the Hutchinson effect process. It could be some byproduct of that. The point about it is you had this relatively small amount of metal coming out of this thing compared to the size of the towers, which turned to dust. If you wanted enough thermite to do that, it would have looked like the biggest fireworks display on the planet, you know, in the middle of New York. And it would have been a fireworks display, and you would have been left with huge blobs of iron at the bottom. You didn't have that. You know, you had some broken down girders, a very small number relative to the size of the buildings, and acres of dust. And it became clear when Dr. Wood was talking about the justification, that's what they wanted to cover up. And she described to me, for example, and we'll maybe get onto this later because it links into another area of research. She described to me this interview with Greg Jenkins, which took place, this ambush interview, which took place on January the 4th. And you'll see this interview posted and reposted and reposted and edited and reposted. And it'll claim that it debunks Judy Wood. She was interviewed at midnight in a room they did not have permission to use. He came along with a camera crew and lighting, and they set this up. And he was asked, can she answer a few questions? And She decided that she would. What came out in that interview is that Greg Jenkins, who's a physicist from the University of Maryland, whose some of his research was funded by the NSA, and that's on his website, he was not happy talking about the dust. And when Dr. Wood started to talk about the dust, some of the dust went up. It went a long way up above the height of the buildings, which, again, does not happen with conventional controlled demolition. It rarely goes higher than the actual building itself. Most of it is a lot lower. But on 9/11, some of this dust went up and up and up.
Very strange effects.
He was not happy talking about that. So Dr. Judy, she thought, he's not happy talking about that. That means that there is something there I need to go and investigate, which is what she did. And that's... Mm-hmm. What led her to discover Hurricane Erin, but that's probably a bit off the thread of it now. But thermite, it's an incendiary, it burns things, it's hot, glowing, and so that if you just look at the pictures, look at the videos, go and watch them again. If you've forgotten what they look like, you don't see any of that. You don't see people burned, you know.
Yeah. The reason why we wanted to have you explain thermite, and tell me, correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, based on your knowledge, but the story we're trying to pose here, there's this huge group of 9/11 truth movement people, doctors and people that should know their stuff. And they're telling everybody, it's thermite. Look over here. Look at the thermite. Thermite is this giant distraction because they don't want people to know that it's probably free energy technology, is my thought. So that's the question we're trying to pose here. Why are all these truth movement people distracting us with a bogus thermite story? What is it they're trying to cover up? And somebody like Judy Wood, first of all, I just want to let's talk about her credentials for just a second. Okay, she's a doctor of engineering.
Correct.
With like a major, right? So she is, her smartness can be seen from space, okay? She is incredibly intelligent. If somebody knows her stuff, it's Dr. Judy Wood. And then you've got all these other people that are in this movement that are posing as experts that don't have anywhere near the level of credentials or intelligence, but they certainly do have an agenda. And this is what we've been uncovering. And when you're in these weird political situations with people and you watch and you observe these strange behaviors, this is why we're bringing this out. So I just wanted to bring out that question. And I think that as we go forward in this conversation and we talk about things that happened at the conference and different things that happened with these folks, we'll be drawing all these parallels. The reason why is because when I was watching Judy's presentation, Dr. Judy Wood's presentation, and I saw her just blatantly talk about thermite and what it wasn't, I realized that in that moment, she just revealed, like it was like Project Naked Emperor is what I would call it. She just revealed that all these people that have associated their names with thermite were all lying in that moment. In my eyes. And that's huge. And that's why they probably don't like her so much and why she's been so put down. And actually, I'd like to segue into that a little bit, if you don't mind, if you have something to say as well to add.
No, I mean.
Because Andrew, we've heard in your presentations as you've gone around to radio shows and you've been in this truth movement. Can you tell us a bit about some of the experiences that you've had trying to talk about Dr. Judy Wood's work in the truth movement and the resistance that you've gotten?
Well, I think, I've done this talk called 9/11 Finding the Truth, where you can find more of the gory details and in my book as well. But if you want the sort of short version, that's the 9/11 Finding the Truth video. There's about four or five different versions online now. And what I found is that basically it's been just small groups of people in the UK mainly that have invited me to do that talk. I did it on the 5th of March, just about 3 weeks ago, to a group of about 30 people, just about 50 or 60 miles from here. And they're the ones that are really getting this information out. The big organized groups like architects and engineers, you know, that have a fancy glossy website, you know, and your tax deductible donation, you know.
we
can take in tax, you know, because we've made this arrangement with the government, but, you know, we're going to investigate 9/11. In fact, we're not, because we're calling for a new investigation. We're not actually doing one, you know. I've been on a good few radio shows where we've covered a lot of the same material. I'd emphasize that I don't think any of them have been as well prepared as you guys have been. But, you know, it's been generally okay for me to discuss this. But I don't think people get it so much as you. I think you get it. But I did, for example, do a show on Red Ice a few years ago. But then I caught Henrik Palmgren with this Danish chemist called Niels Harrit, who promotes this thermite nonsense. You know, Red Ice Radio claims to be one of these bastions of truth, and I pointed out that Henrik Palmgren was confusing theory and evidence. He was interchangeably swapping these. And so he seemed to think there was still some mileage that thermite might have been used to destroy the towers and that Niels Harrit wasn't a liar, you know. I mean, it's all right if you're talking about the construction of the pyramids, you know, to say, well, so-and-so's theory has probably got more weight than this one, because the construction of the pyramids wasn't a crime. It wasn't a contemporary, massive, global crime which has changed the world. So it's, to me, you know, maybe it's just me, you know, maybe I'm being overly judgmental. I think it's okay to theorize about the construction of the pyramids or, you know, this sort of thing. That's fine. And if you happen to be wrong, well, you just, that's fair enough. You can't help it. But when you have got something like 9/11, the biggest crime committed this century using an advanced technology, and you just want to theorize about it, I kind of think that's unethical, really. And that's what I tried to point out to Henrik Palmgren, that if he's going to have guests on, that's fine. You know, have the guests on. But if you know that they're lying about this, you call them out. You tell them that they are lying. And I do this publicly. I call out these liars in the talks that I give in public in front of an audience. I don't mind doing it because I can prove that they are liars. That's why I do it. And it's not something I enjoy doing, but I want to help people. It's like giving them a set of armor. It's giving them a set of intellectual armor which they can put on and go forwards and find the truth and not fall for any of the crap. Basically, that's what my objective is. But Henrik Palmgren, when I put this article on my website, I didn't actually bother to write to him because I thought there was no point. He had four guests in a row talking about 9/11, and all of them were saying, oh, we don't think Dr. Judy Wood's right. We think it's thermite, or we think it's nukes or something. And this has been established for years. And Henrik Palmgren himself was given an early copy of the Where Did the Towers Go? But before it had been even printed, he was specially given a PDF of that book, right? So he was given an advance copy in preparation for his interview with Dr. Wood. And I pointed this out in the article. And then he comes back and he claimed that I was telling Red Ice Radio what they should have on and what they should say and how he should run his program and all of this. He did an hour-long tirade against me because of this article that I put up. I mean, if he wants to do that, that's fine. But he missed the point of what I was trying to say. That, in other words, he cared more about the subscriptions on Red Ice Radio than he did about what happened on 9/11. That, to me, that from my perspective, I could be wrong about that, but that's what it looked like to me, you know.
This is why I'm so excited to have you in this conversation, because we've had the same experiences. Just a couple weeks ago, an individual that I came out against did an hour-long tirade about me, right? Yes. So we know. Yeah. And we're gonna bring Mel V on for just a moment in a little bit, because we share this. I really like what you said about if people are lying, you're gonna call them out because you can prove it.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important that somebody is still left on this planet that actually does call people out and doesn't just care about subscriptions and ratings, because we know that those are all faked and rigged anyway. So
a lot of it. I mean, this is everyone wants to have a peaceful, happy community, you know, where everyone, you know, and I felt that I was joining that in the scholars group, for example. That was in 2007, as I said, and I thought, oh, great, I'm joining this community of like minds, you know, and we're going to work it out. We're going to do, I don't know where it's going to go, but we're going to get somewhere, you know. But then a few months into it, I put something up on my website about this thermite not being the correct explanation or something. And that was in 2007, before I'd heavily got into Dr. Judy Wood's research. And then this one of the other scholars members wrote to me, Frank Leggy was his name, and he says, I think you should take that article off your website. And I say, why? There's nothing wrong with it. So, and I says, my website doesn't get much traffic anyway. And he says, I think you should take it off. So I just thought, well, why has he written to me? That must be important. It must be important because mine was a little website. It's still not get as much traffic as many other websites I know. Not that I'm after that. That must be important, and so I'll leave it. And I wrote back to him, so, well, it's clearly important that you should write to my little website, you know, to ask me to take this thing off. I'm going to leave it on. Thank you very much. And I left it at that. So it's when you get indications like that they're trying to sort of encourage you in a certain way you know, to go in another direction when there's no obvious reason for that, that's when the sort of alarm bells should start ringing, and that's when they do for me.
Mm. Now, I wanted to bring some technical stuff into here too. Tavon, can you just talk a bit while we're on this topic about kind of what Andrew said earlier? You're in those forums too,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And you're just looking for the technical information because you're interested in free energy, truth, chemistry, that sort of thing. So can you just talk a little bit about that and how you feel?
Well, so I've been following the free energy forums for a couple of years. And I mean, I guess almost 10 years or so. And there are certain forums I'm no longer a part of. Like, for example, overunity.com, maybe about 4 years ago. Yeah, I used to follow it. And even before that, when it was things were getting really interesting. But it got to a point when there were new people coming on the forum, forming up or creating these threads. It got interesting in the beginning. It follows the same pattern of it's interesting. It draws people's attention into the forum to want to become a part of the forum. And then, I don't know, about between 5 and 10 pages into the forum, the trolling starts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the author of the forum, they might even just decide you won't see them from OverUnity because basically they've been trolled out of the forum. And it's like their idea has been basically squashed. And so I saw so much of that if you're someone who's been following alternative energy for a long time, you quickly form an opinion that, well, okay, this particular site isn't serious about having an open research towards finding an actual
solution.
That and then sure enough, nowadays you can go to something that is a known trolling website like an OverUnity.com. Look, pick any thread. You just close your eyes, pick a thread, fast forward to page 250, and you can see the change in the tone from when, oh, I got this idea about this, to basically filth at the end. So
I'm going to take the opportunity to say this now, Andrew. We have to tell you and. Audience, we have to tell you this. We just discovered yesterday, our family did, with our project. There's actually on overunity.com, there's one particular thread that has 238 pages with over 4,000 comments dedicated to trashing our project.
Wow.
That's how much time, effort, energy, and you gotta believe that they were paid. They had some kind of help there. That's a lot of trashing.
It is, yeah.
And sway public.
I mean, just a general comment about forums. I think that there are a couple of problems, really. I don't really post on forums now. The biggest problem is anonymity. I mean, whenever forums originally got going, I think it was in the days of the BBSs, the bulletin board systems, which were before the internet. You'd adopt some catchy handle, Geek Hacker or something like that, particularly in those days. And you stick with that, and that's typically what you get on these forums. And in fact, on the JREF forum, the James Randi Educational Foundation, which is one of the biggest debunking forums, which I think has sort of now been taken over by metabunk.org, I think that's kind of taken over from JREF, have these trolls called Gravy and D-Duck. And this sort of thing. And you use these handles, so you never know who you're speaking to. And really now, if I just go on to any forum thread, doesn't matter what it's about, if I see a load of anonymous handles and not real names, I'm not interested.
Yes.
Because whether those anonymous handles are done for just fun reasons or to protect their identity genuinely for a genuine reason, which I can understand, doesn't matter. That discussion will get compromised because it just takes a third disingenuous anonymous person to mix in with the rest and they can trash the whole thing. And that's what happens. Now, Facebook, for all its faults, is a little bit different because most genuine people on Facebook will actually post a picture of themselves, a little bit about their life, their little boy or their pet or something like that. So if you go onto that and look at their profile, and they've made enough information public, you can get a better feel for whether that's a real person or not. And that's certainly been the case with, we've got a 9/11 group called Real 9/11 Truth. If anybody wants to join that, we keep that. That's free of trolls. That is pretty much troll free because there are about three or four or five people admin in that group. we keep the trolls well out of there. And we, in consequence, there aren't many posts. You know, we don't have a lot of posts. We maybe have two or three posts a week maximum. Sometimes a few weeks without a post. And that's just the way it is. Because the trolling, as you've observed, is clearly a highly funded, highly resourced operation.
Yes,
I think it's not just a question of being done, you know, in the bowels of some, you know, Cheyenne Mountain or somewhere like that. I think it works a lot more subtly than that. I think there are ordinary people who have something somehow implanted into them to make them go onto YouTube and become internet trolls. I don't think it's all just funded. I think some of it is, well, we could do a whole program on the trolling issues, but I think it's more complicated than it would at first appear.
Well, we have done a whole program on the trolling issues.
Okay. Maybe should listen to that then. Maybe I'll learn something.
But talking about JTRIG, and, you know, there were some really heavy documents leaked by Edward Snowden that show the training programs that they put some of the higher level trolls through, and then it gets down, when you get down to like the lower echelons, those particular trolls are they're people that don't even know that they're being used. So there's like a social policing that goes on as well. And this is a great place to segue into the next part of our conversation that I'd like to start having. I have a concept that we want to put forward here, and we're calling it the Shadow Truth Movement. And we believe that it's a co-intel pro operation. About controlled opposition. This is just one aspect of all this trolling and everything. But this is controlled opposition. We're talking about people that claim leadership positions in social movements to distract and control those social movements. Mm-hmm. Done in free energy, public health, environmental areas, and more. So all the big hot topics like vaccines and cures for cancer and chemtrails and geoengineering and all that stuff, there are these, like, let me just try to describe it. It's kind of like it's like a layer, right? We know that mainstream is all nonsense and BS and lies. Then there's a layer that's called alternative, alternative media, alternative energy. And we believe that that second layer is completely infiltrated with these controlled opposition people that parade as experts, free energy experts. And this is going to lead us into our next thing. Let me just share my screen for just a second. We're going to talk about here we go. We're calling it the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference, the Dog and Pony Show. Okay. Now, this Energy Movement Conference is a big conference. It happened 2 years in a row. Then they changed it into something else the next year. Anyway, we're just talking about this conference in 2012 and 2013. But the first one in 2012, there are many videos that are out there on YouTube. They brought a lot of guest speakers in. You were one of them, and there were many other people. But we're going to talk a little bit about what was going on behind the scenes for this particular conference. And just want to ask you a quick question. If you could just describe Dr. Judy Wood, okay? We believe, I'll stop sharing for a second. Mm-hmm. The way Tavon and I feel is that Dr. Judy Wood was the smartest person in that room. And we feel that her presentation was probably the most important presentation that was at that conference as far as the information that was being disclosed. But you can even tell by what's going on, because her presentation had to be cut. It went across 2 days. Her clicker was constantly not working. There was all these weird little things going on. Now, let me just share very briefly that I had to do a keynote speaking engagement at another conference, and in my own way, I had a very similar experience where the conference director was, there were big problems. It was all about bringing in lots of money. He got mad at me because I didn't bring a QEG with me. I mean, there was a whole bunch of stuff, and I've disclosed all of it in my book, right? So if anybody wants to know the story, you can go read the book. But the thing is that I had a situation where I was bounced around at a conference and I was not treated as if my information was important. And I was just wondering if you could please tell us what the experience was like for Dr. Judy Wood at this particular conference from your personal experience there.
Yeah, well, that was right what you said. She was messed around and they changed. I think the original plan was they were going to have an hour on Friday and then they were going to have a meal and then they were going to have the second half of the presentation. But instead of doing that, they decided to have a roundtable discussion. I think part of that roundtable discussion, you can see, I think you've got a still from it there. If you watch the whole thing, you'll see that she's given very little input and nobody really kind of brings her into the discussion. She makes a few points at an appropriate, point. But they don't really, as you said, we of course agree that hers was the most important presentation, simply because it is I think now, and I didn't really realize this until 2008 or late 2007, what she's found out is the biggest single reason why free energy technology is not in use. It's not to do with economics, really, I don't think. It's not to do with that at all. It's to do with it. It represents a complete liberation from the current system. It is the door where you get out of the matrix. Free energy is that. And tied in with that is the weaponization of it and knowledge that it's been weaponized. If people understand that it's already been weaponized, right, it has already been weaponized. That's not a theory. That is what actually happened to the tower. That was a form of free energy technology, similar to what John Hutchison has done in some one or more ways. It's already been weaponized. So that proves that A, it's been weaponized, B, that it's real, and C, that there is some group somewhere, we don't know who they are, we still don't know who they are, but they appear to have some fairly strong connections to the military industrial complex that has this technology. So black programs are real. This has been developed in secret. Not only that, but when you look at the evidence as you've been discussing, here we are, we're talking about it. 14 years later, and people say, oh, when are we going to get free energy? Well, I don't know when we're going to get it, because a few people are waking up now, 14 years after the event. That's you know, a teenager's life. My son is, you know, he's like, he's most of his life he's known about what I know about. You know, he's one of the few people. He's 16 at the end of this month. So, the cover-up has worked. Whatever you think about it, whatever you think about these infighting and blah, 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 you know, the cover-up has been good enough and comprehensive enough to work. That's the point. So the people that have got this technology, they're still in control. How we stop them from being in control, I have no answer to that question. I do not know. What we do know is that Science Applications International Corporation and Applied Research Associates know more about this than we do. Are they going to ever admit that publicly? Well, I think you know the answer to that question.
Right. Right. Very. Thank you for sharing that. Now, let's bring Mel B on to share her story. Biggie, if you can go ahead and bring her in. And Mel B is going to join us because we're going to talk about this conference. Mel B was there at the conference. And she'll be with us in just a second, I'm sure. She was there at the conference, and she saw a lot of things as well. And in some, like, offline conversations between Mel and I, she was saying, oh, goodness, I was having conversations with Dr. Judy Wood and with Andrew as well. And basically, it was just being uncovered that here's the most important information at the conference, like you were just saying. And there's all these other people that claim to be experts that have much lower credentials, and they were given the spotlight. They were given loads of time.
Their pointers worked.
And their pointers worked when they clicked.
Hey, guys.
Here comes Mel. Let's get some video.
Hey, guys. Sorry about that. It's trying to get into the meeting at the last moment there. How y'all doing? Can you see me?
Not yet.
I'm still loading.
Bear with me.
There you are.
Oh, hello.
Thank you so much, Mel. So
very fetching headphones you've got there.
Aren't they awesome?
So everybody, I wanted to bring Mel on because Mel has firsthand experience of things that were going on at that conference. And you said to me earlier, Mel, yeah, maybe now it's time to disclose and let's talk about some of the stuff that was going on behind the scenes at this conference. And the reason why we're bringing this up is because we want everybody to know that what you're being shown in these YouTube videos that are nice and polished and these people that are advocates for free energy, there's a whole different story behind the scenes. And just to help people have some more discernment for what's real, what's true. So, Mel, go ahead and just take it away and share your testimony about the conference.
Thanks, Hope. And I just want to say, I want to pick on a few points that you've kind of brought into context, which will lead into what I'm about to say. Firstly, with regards to something you said, Andrew, about calling it out. And when I met you at the conference, that was the one thing I think that I connected with Andrew on, was a common ground of we both kind of don't do the bullshit. We both like to kind of call it out. And he did a bit of calling out, and as did I. And I was very proud of him for it, because it was quite a moment at the conference when he did so. And it really was around the fact that there were a lot of what we consider controlled opposition elements at this particular conference. Now, let me explain some of the infrastructure of how the conference organization was set up. Is that I know some of the conference organizers because I've worked with them on conferences prior to the Breakthrough Energy Movement conference. These organizers hosted the Secret Space Program conference, which happened the year before. And I was there. I was actually on stage hosting at that one. A fellow broadcaster on this network, Desiree Rover, was one of the main hosts at that conference. So it's, you know, close to a family. We all work together kind of thing. And what happened was at the Breakthrough Energy Movement conference, they had Judy Wood there because the previous year at the Secret Space Program conference, we had Richard Hoagland actually doing a presentation on Judy Wood's material. Okay, but it wasn't altogether, I think the thing that was most interesting to me about his presentation was there was a lot of explanations and examples of John Hutchinson's work, which up until that time I had no idea of. Sorry, Michael Hutchinson's, it is Michael Hutchinson's work.
I don't know there's much in Hoagland's presentation about that. He muddled things up, and as you say, he presented Dr. Wood's research for an hour and a half, and he made a lot of mistakes. For anyone that's interested, I wrote that all up in an article on my website.
Yes, he did. I remember quite clearly, actually, that what was really strange about that was it almost as if he was trying to take credit for her work and the way he presented all that stuff. And it was really odd because the vibe we got from Hoagland at the conference was very snobby, very standoffish. He walked around like he's better than everybody else. He behaved like a bit of a diva. And of course, you know, none of that stuff washes with me, so we didn't bother interviewing him at that particular conference. We did, however, get some great interviews with Richard Doland and a couple of the other people who were there. So it was a really good conference. And that wasn't the first conference we'd worked with that group of people, because there was one the year before that in Belgium, which was a conference at which Biggie and I were actually attacked and our equipment was taken from us whilst we were sleeping. We were gassed and knocked out. So we've had quite a history with the organizers of these conferences. The one guy called Jeroen in particular, he was the common person throughout all three of the conferences, you know, the one in Belgium, then obviously the Secret Space Program conference, and then the Breakthrough Energy Movement conference. But the Breakthrough Energy Movement conference, there were other elements who somehow got involved, people obviously who provided the funding and the finances, and I think there was a lot of influence. And I was initially approached to do a bit of promotions on my radio show about this Breakthrough Energy Movement conference happening and advertise it. I was one of the first people to actually advertise that it was happening because they came to me to do it because I have a long-standing history of working with them. But 2 weeks before the conference happens and I start looking at who the speakers are to research them, because obviously I'm going to be interviewing them at the event, and I start recoiling in horror as I start to uncover who some of these people are. And then I arrive at the conference, obviously, and I was just... It really was an uncomfortable situation. I remember, Andrew, you were probably privy to some of my groanings about stuff that wasn't okay, about all the stuff that had happened. And behind the scenes, me having always been the main media body that worked with them, I was also kind of marginalized, and somehow another media body was brought in and given all the space to work in, and I didn't have a space. And it was just really, there was a lot of strangeness going on like that. Same thing happened to Judy Wood. She was also marginalized compared to, and I have to agree with you, Andrew, that hers was the best information, and her, you know, although sometimes she struggled to put across her point, as clearly as perhaps I would have liked to have heard it, it was the most important, as far as I'm concerned, presentation at that particular conference. And there was some really interesting stuff, including Fernando Voss's glowing ball in a dark room, which just blew my mind. But that's another story. With regards to Judy Wood, she, I think I spent a lot of time with you and Dr. Judy, Andrew, because there was definitely, for me, a distinctive element of controlled opposition, and then those who are kind of sussing out that there is controlled opposition. There was this distinctive camps going on at this particular event. And it was really stressful. I had such a migraine after the first day and after the second day as well. And in fact, I didn't even stay for any of the evening events because I was just so indignant at the whole thing. And, of course, this is where I met for the first time Fernando Vossa. Michael Tellinger, this was the second time I had ran into him. I worked with him previously. And who else said, I met you there for the first time, Andrew, met Dr. Judy Wood. And, of course, that was where I famously met Sasha Stone for the first time as well. And, you know, that's another whole long story. But it was actually in, my initial reaction to that when I first met Sasha Stone was like, this guy's connected to the UN. This can't be right. And I went onto Facebook the first day of the conference, and I wrote on Facebook, this is like Oppositionville, Shillville. I don't know what I'm doing here. And Jeroen van Straten got very angry with me, actually. And they were very annoyed about the fact that I'd done that because they still had a day two of the conference to go on. And of course, I'd made public my unhappiness about, and I actually asked him, I said, look, after the conference, let's have a meeting because I want to sit down and discuss with you and take you through the evidence about some of the people that you've had there. So you can understand what it is you're doing. You've raised all this money to put on a conference, but you've created a platform. And don't get me wrong, this conference was beautiful, okay? Some of the performances and presentations at the start of the day and some of the technology we saw, they were just, it was just fantastically done. It really was well done. And what a pity. What a pity, because for all that, there was so much behind the scenes drama because of the fact that there was a lot of controlled opposition there who were all trying to force an agenda when you actually have a few really good, really truthful people there too. And it did create an air of conflict. There definitely was, for me, I remember very clearly, definite schisms within parties that were attending the event, and definitely diametrically opposing points of view, and a few of these things were actually brought up in a couple of the chat forums that they had when they had the discussion groups and the discussion panel on the stage. So, you know, from my point of view, yeah, you know, I have tried to speak to Jeroen van Straten afterwards to say to him, look, this is the evidence, and we made several appointments, and he never came through on any of them. You know, after going to all that effort of months and months of organizing and spending however many hundreds of thousands of euros they spent on that conference, I don't think you want to hear that you've screwed up that badly, which basically it was, in my opinion. Although that being said, that conference was the catalyst for many things that came afterwards and also really brought Judy Wood to the attention of a much bigger audience because the footage from that conference has gone viral. And also, really, it's one of the things that catapulted Sasha into the sort of truth sphere because of that very potent speech that he gave, which also went viral. So in a lot of ways, it was great in terms of giving a lot of attention to certain things, but also there's a lot of things that which I felt were, you know, from a really puritanical point of view, which I am very much like you, Andrew, and very much like Hope, you know, I had enough of the bullshit because it's problematic. It's what's causing all the problems. It's what's keeping us sort of running around in circles. And people who give a platform to that are just adding to the problem. They're not actually adding to the solution. No matter how many solutions they claim to be presenting with all this information, a lot of it is actually very distracting.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, we spoke about a few of the people there, I think, in the limited time that we were talking. You know, and I picked up Nick Begich on one of his previous statements about the did he still think it was justified that they bombed Afghanistan, you know, after the alleged events of 9/11? And even though he'd seen Dr. Wood's presentation, you know, he didn't say it quite literally, but he still essentially agreed that it was justified that they should have bombed Afghanistan. You know, I was expecting him to say, no, clearly it was a huge mistake and we shouldn't even consider doing anything like that again based on what we know now. But he didn't say that. He said, and you can, this clip is on YouTube if anybody wants to go and watch it. He said something like, oh, people in this room would be surprised at my attitude to warfare, you know. And then he made some sort of various new agey comments as well. And we need to pull together, and everyone starts clapping, you know. And I'm thinking, hang on, why are you clapping? He just said that the bombing of Afghanistan was a good idea, you know. And it's just crazy stuff like that. And that's how a lot of this movement runs. That if you say the right things and make the right motions, you know, again, it's just exactly the same as the mainstream. You know, you build a following, you know, and all of this, and people think you're wonderful. And, you know, and so forth. And that, if you're not careful, that's nice to think that. It's good to respect people, obviously. But don't let it blind you to what they're actually saying. You know, make sure that what they're saying is still ethical, logical, etc. That's what I'd like people to take away from this interview. Okay, we're talking about specific people. But those specific people that we've mentioned, and we might even mention a few more before the end of the program, they've essentially taught us things. They've essentially taught us about how this whole cover-up of these systems and technologies works. And I think it's, you know, going back to what I said earlier in the discussion, that's why I talk about it. I don't mean to sound curmudgeonly and horrible about these people. I want people to see what's at work. And it's evil, essentially, in a word. It is evil. That's what we are dealing with. We are dealing with a pervasive form of evil.
Thank you very much for bringing that up. I wanted to talk about that evil, and it's really exciting for me to get all four of us here in this conversation about this, because this particular conference and the one that came after it as well, and all the footage, a lot came from that. And it kind of went in a bunch of different directions. And I've actually heard somebody say that the greater agenda by the evil forces, people, shadow masters that put this stuff out there, is they do something called mapping, right? Well, they'll put something experimental out there into society, and they'll try to map it. And they'll try to, like, say, well, where are people going to go with this? It's a litmus test. How many people can we fool with this particular lie that we're going to put out there? Let's see, you know, let's gauge where society's at when it comes to these buzzwords. And it's really important that we have this discussion, because I think the people on this call right now, I think we represent some of the best when it comes to fact-finding, evidence researching, critical thinking, problem solving. We don't get swayed. I think at one point Mel said that you are guru proof, right? Or something like that. We don't get swayed by these big fancy speeches, and you know, these are poster people, imposters. They're up there on a stage acting like a musician. That's what those pretty girls are all about. The assistants for the musicians, the magician's assistants, is to get everybody's attention away from what the guy's doing, right? So can we just talk a little bit more? Mel, you said, you looked like you were going to say something now.
Yeah, I was going to say, guru resistant. I think that's the term. Absolutely. You know, when you get into media, I listened to Andrew's story, and there's so many patterns that are such hallmarks of my experience, and I hope you and I have recounted this as well. As you get into this, you start to uncover the information, and then you start to work with people to uncover certain amounts of information, and then those groups of people turn out to be something other than what you initially thought they were all about. But initially, you're just so excited to find other people who are also interested in this, or perhaps are, you know, don't think you're crazy for thinking this way, that you kind of just thought through caution to win and dive headed first. But along the way, you start to notice some dishonorable patterns of behavior and things that don't really contribute to creating a better world, aren't truthful, aren't ethical. And, well, you know, I don't want to be part of the problem again. I always focus on trying to head towards some kind of solution for everything. And for me, that's a fundamental orientation, which has really kept me on the straight and narrow, not falling too far into the guru bandwagon. And, you know, myself necessarily investing too much of my energetic currency into personality cults, which can be very damaging, very destructive. And to be honest with you, most of the time are no better than any religion or, you know, indoctrinating cult or institution that we're trying to escape. In fact, I think they serve exactly the same purpose, which really is distraction and perversion. So you just got to start to recognize all the patterns, as you know, and for me, the patterns are becoming more and more obvious the more and more we do this. And of course, the more and more, you know, we connect with other people who are also working their way through deconfusing themselves from the many layers that are put in front of us in order to keep us busy and distracted. But I think you get to a point, Hope, like where you and I are, where, you know, you can pretty much see through most of it just by noting a few simple markers, which become very obvious and ingrained into your second nature after a while. You start to recognize it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, as you say, you see these patterns about how people operate in groups, how they try to steer the group or how the group behaves. And I come to the conclusion that if you're working with more than about three or four people, you're going to see somebody that tries to do something opposite to what you're trying to do. You know, this is why I work independently, very much like my friend Richard D. Hall. We both work independently and we just occasionally collaborate when it suits us both. You know, we don't make any formal arrangement that we're going to collaborate, because, you know, there's just so many people that don't have this intent to actually keep the evidence and
yes,
focus on that as the primary goal. They've got some other agenda going on, you know, of some kind.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. I kind of ran into that too. You know, just working on small, you know, projects with alternative energy, with meeting people on these groups online and on Skype. And this, I think what's called the Judas principle seems to be after a certain number of people, there's always one.
It's like
that,
five, right?
Yeah,
after five people, one's going to be a Judas.
Among, it's just different from everyone else in the group that you've taken the time, or, you know, to come together. I've noticed that too.
Fascinating. So, okay, we've got about 15 minutes left. Now, Mel, if you'd like to hang out with us to the end of the show, we did want to cover Stephen E. Jones and Sterling Allen and what happened there from the conference. So it's up to you, Mel, if you'd like to hang in there. But what we're going to do is this segment is called Chilling Out About 9/11 with Sterling Allen and Stephen E. Jones. And this was taken from an incredible post, an article that Andrew put together. Now, first thing we're going to do is run a very short clip. And let me just introduce this clip. This is from the same Breakthrough Energy Movement conference. And it was after Dr. Judy Wood got up and gave her presentation. And prior to her presentation, Sterling Allen had gotten up and given his own presentation on Judy's work, which was very strange. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
When you know the person who you're referencing is going to be at the conference giving a full presentation, right? Yeah. Straight in the horse's mouth kind of thing. But that's what Sterling did in his presentation. And then he stood up in the audience and he made a big speech. I've labeled this film Sterling Defends Stephen E. Jones because what happened was, well, we're gonna talk to Andrew about what happened afterwards. So what you're seeing is Sterling standing up in the audience and talking about how Stephen E. Jones is a good friend of his and they live together in an intentional community and like their parents know each other or something along those lines.
The Q&A after her presentation.
And that he's gonna go and he's gonna, cause maybe it was just a misunderstanding and he didn't really mean science by vote, right? So, or something along those lines. So let's just go ahead and Biggie, run that clip.
In that horrible cloud is that it is a demonstration of free energy technology.
I don't disagree with you on that.
And that is what I am talking about here today. I'm not talking about people's opinions and...
I wanted to make a point that Dr. Stephen Jones, he lives in a neighboring town of mine in Spring City, Utah. He's a friend of mine and of my parents. They're actually in an intentional community together, so I've got a very tight connection with him. And what I've learned today and yesterday about Stephen Jones is very troubling to me, and basically plays the role of a decoy. Don't look here type of thing. And the reason that that's supported is because he has this evidence and he has not gone with it. It's, to me, blatantly obvious. So I commit to you that I will sit down with my good friend, Stephen E. Jones, who he knows me inside and out. And I know not inside and out, but we knew each other really well. And I'm going to be sitting down with him in person with this book in hand, and I will say, Stephen, why don't you go with this story? Because this is very, very, very obvious.
Yes.
And I will then report on my conversation, and I will either explain where the mental disconnect is on his part, that he didn't see this, now he does, or that he is indeed the decoy, and he's trying to divert attention as a government plant to get us to look the other way and not see something that we should be seeing that she's pointed out.
Well,
thank you.
All right, so there's the clip about what happened at the conference and other things happened behind the scenes that were not caught on camera, but that was shocking to me when I first realized that that was Sterling Allen standing up and defending Stephen E. Jones, but it gets a little bit deeper than that. So we're going to have Andrew, please. You have an amazing article that you put together with tons of research about all these different correspondences that went back and forth between you and Sterling talking about this and all this proof. The link to your article is in the PowerPoint. So if anybody wants to go read it for themselves, it's right there. But it's called Chilling Out, about 9/11, with Sterling D. Allen and Stephen E. Jones. So, Andrew, if you can go ahead and just tell us what happened after that particular incident.
Yeah, well, to follow up from that clip you just showed, you know, Allen sounds sincere. He sounds like he's genuinely shocked by the information that was shown. And so the obvious reaction to that would be to go to Stephen E. Jones. In fact, he said what he was going to do. And if you read the article I put together, what actually came out as a result of that was a statement from Jones where he essentially said that Pons and Fleischmann were wrong about nuclear fusion in their experiments. That's all he said. He didn't comment anything about Dr. Judy Wood's research or anything like that. And Sterling Allen essentially just reposted that statement from Jones on his website and didn't make any comment that he'd actually sat down and gone through what was in the BEM presentation or the Where Did the Towers Go book. There was no real sort of follow-up to that at all. It's just like Allen was shocked at the conference, sincerely shocked, went back to Jones, and Jones hypnotized him and said, everything's all right, Sterling, just go back to what you were doing before and forget that you ever saw that presentation. You know, there's nothing wrong with me, blah, 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 blah. And we'd already, I think, found out sometime earlier that Jones and Allen lived in the same town, or they lived about three blocks away or something, and that Sterling Allen's parents knew Stephen E. Jones. So there was this connection which apparently had been ongoing for several years. And that's not, you know, me digging at Sterling Allen admits that in one of his interviews. And when I picked him up on these points by email to check that I got the story straight and there wasn't something I was missing, he said to me, oh, you're too hung up on 9/11. You should chill out, you know, and that's you've got the email in that article. I'm thinking, really? So you think 9/11 is not important, then, the fact that this energy technology which was used, you think that's just irrelevant or something, you know, to what you're putting on your PezWiki website? I'd say, Sterling, that it's the most flipping, that should be on the homepage of your, you should have a big banner saying, watch this video about why we don't have free energy, and then put all the other stuff underneath, you know. That's the way it should be, Sterling. And from his reaction in that clip you showed there, you would have thought that that would be the sincere reaction that he would do. You know, just a banner, you know, a little banner to say, watch this. This is flipping important, you know. But no, he doesn't do that. He starts defending Jones, and then he starts going on about various other things which are irrelevant. He scans pages from the book. He posts those without permission. I mean, I know people do that, but, you know, there was a point to this. He put this thing about Tesla death ray that destroyed the towers. Then he did actually change that at some later point. He took that part out, so that was slight progress. But there was also another little episode which wasn't on that clip. I was explaining while that clip was playing to you. Dr. Wood's presentation was actually split into three parts in the actual event. And across the second and third part, just towards the end of the second part, Dr. Judy played the clip about tritium, and she discussed the use of tritium the discovery of tritium in cold fusion reactions, and the discovery of tritium in the bottom of World Trade Center 6 in the water there. And that was at the end, and then it was cut, and then she had to go to the next session. I think it was the next day, or it was later in the day or something. I can't remember how it was exactly split. But she started off the third part with a replay of the tritium stuff to recap on where they left off. And at that point, Sterling Allen gets up from the audience, goes up to Dr. Wood at the front, and he whispers something in her ear. And I was sat right at the front. I didn't know what he'd said. And then he went back and sat down. And I said to Dr. Judy afterwards, "What did Sterling Allen come up to you and said?" He said, "Oh, you've already played this thing about tritium. You don't need to play it again." So yeah. Again, it's like the thing with the Jenkins thing with the dust going up. Clearly, the tritium is important. Tritium is one of the fingerprints of this weapons technology. We know that now, and it's related to cold fusion. That and of course, Jones. We haven't said this explicitly yet, but that's in the presentation. So you've hopefully picked it up. We haven't said it in our discussion, but it's in the presentation. Jones's area of research in the mid to late 80s was cold fusion. So if that's not anybody a red flag for somebody, pardon?
Yeah. Yeah.
If anybody would know, it would be him.
So in other words, Jones is not just bumbling around talking about thermite because he thinks it's the best explanation. He knows. He actually knows that that's very, very important to what happened to the destruction of the towers. He's got some knowledge of physics which is relevant to him. In other words, he's more trained to know what to cover up. If you look at all this correspondence with Dr. Judy and other people, you'll see that he actually is steering people to get them, to train them to help in the cover-up. And that's what he's doing. So his hands are very, very dirty, very dirty. He's not just some dumb physics professor, you know, just arguing because he thinks thermite is part of his ego, you know, or something. It's part of his ego, which is to do with his academic standards. No, it's not that. It's not that. Same with Fetzer. They know that what Dr. Wood has put out is right. All right? Mm-hmm. It's not a theory or anything like that. It is the truth. It is right. And that's why they've got to work so hard to cover it up. And it's worked generally.
And I wanted to say, because we've got about 5-7 minutes left, so we're getting really close to the end here. The reason why I really wanted to bring out this Sterling Allen story is because our family and our project, we'd had experiences with Sterling Allen over a course of a couple of years where he's been reporting on our work. And if you look at your article, Andrew, about your experience with him, about how he's skewing this and he's tweaking that and he's putting his opinion here and this isn't really correct and that's not correct and he's, you know, manipulating the public opinion, he's done that with us and our project. And these people are putting these positions, just like you said, because they know that Judy Wood was right and that her information is correct. And they're doing everything they can to say, don't look at that, it's wrong, go here. And you know what? They're doing it with our project too. They know that what we're working on is a legitimate free energy device, and they're doing everything they can, 4,000 comments, to say, go look over there, right?
Yep.
Mel, do you have anything to add?
I was actually just absolutely astonished at the level. You know, it's just interesting listening to all this evidence of how these people operate. And I'm absolutely astonished at the level at which they go to do this and how organized this whole trolling exercise is that's orchestrated by intel agencies through various well-distanced intermediaries. And over the years, I've experienced various versions of what you have described through various things. And what's interesting to note is that good people who perhaps want to get involved in helping these projects or doing good things and perhaps start chatting on forums, they are often put off by, you know, genuinely nice people or kind people by being confronted by some of the ugliness and nastiness that they have to deal with. And this is why I reckon there is so little support in terms of finances and resources and stuff going around in solutions orientated projects like ours, Hope, you know, and yours and various other ones out there that just don't get anywhere. It's because the level to which this is being attacked is just so vast. It's on every level. It's the supporters, it's the financiers, it's absolutely everything. Even the way to which they work public opinion through forums and threads, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, Dr. Wood and I have discussed that as well, and we just sort of have a little saying, it's a wonder to behold. You know, it truly is, yes, a wonder to behold.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds like we're admiring it, but we're not. Well, in one sense we are, because it's so intricate, so comprehensive. It reaches across most levels of human consciousness, you know, and I describe the cover-up as being micromanaged, certainly in terms of 9/11. They micromanage people down to a man, you know, or a person, I should say, because that's essentially what they did with me. You know, I was very important to them, and I'm just thinking, look, who am I? You know, I'm just a guy with a website. I did an ordinary university degree. You know, I work at home. I've got two kids. I've got two cats. You know, I didn't want to get involved in any of this. You know, I just wanted, you know, play video games like I used to, you know, and just go out for walks and stuff like that. But so why am I getting all this sort of attention? Well, clearly the only thing that I'm doing different to everyone else is I'm saying different things. So it must be what I'm saying, which is important. You know,
divergent.
Yeah, whatever. But more predictive programming, you see, isn't it? So, you know, look what happens to the divergent people. You know.
Now, with the few minutes we got left here, we got about 3 minutes left. I want to end this whole thing. We've uncovered, again, intense information, big cover-ups, huge lies, massive betrayals, all that ugly stuff. But there's hope. Okay, there's hope.
Always hope.
There's always hope. And what we're trying to say here is we really want people to take back their critical thinking skills, to listen to the evidence, to not just listen to things that people say. Because the good news is that if you just, it's kind of like opposite land. If you look at everything, the opposite of what they're trying to show you is that whole, If they're trying to project something on one person, that's probably what they are themselves, that whole psychological projection. Well, now if you just look at it backwards, you'll see whatever they don't want you to pay attention to, that's the truth.
Yes.
So you can find the truth through all of this. And I just wanted to say that there is hope. Please educate yourselves. Read. Take the time. Watch the shows. Weigh things out. Take notes. Use your brain. And get off your knees, human race, because we're acting like slaves when we just listen to what somebody else tells us and say, oh, that must be true. You know, come on. Come on. Just look it up yourself. Those are my parting words. Andrew, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, similar words, really. You know, just if people want to write to me to find out more about anything that I've said, or they read some of the articles and don't understand anything, I try and answer all the emails that I get. I'm usually able to do that. It's not a problem at the moment, certainly. I've got some talks coming up. If anybody in the UK wants to come along and say hello and sort of, you know, just suss me out personally, quite happy to do that. And they're all listed on the homepage of my website.
Excellent. And that's checktheevidence.com.
Checktheevidence.com.
Right. Thank you so much, Andrew. It's been such a pleasure to have you. Thanks, Mel, for coming on and sharing your testimony. And to everybody listening, thank you so much again for joining us for another fantastic episode of the People's Free Energy Show. And we'll see you next week for our last episode of
last
the season.
One.
So, all right, everybody. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into CCN. This unique network is dedicated to free and independent media. CCN was created with the belief that information is the common heritage of all beings, which is why our live stream high-definition broadcast is easily accessible and free to view. If we want to change the world, we must first change the media. Having produced over 1,000 shows in 2015, which are all archived on YouTube. We look forward to bringing you more groundbreaking, cutting-edge information in 2016. For more information on what is on, please check out our broadcast guide for weekly updates. CCN broadcasts in multiple languages and features some key voices of our challenging times who are all in pursuit of a free, fair, just, sustainable world. CCN belongs to you, the people, and it is up to you all to keep this network on the air. Please contribute to the Network Support Fund or visit the CCN shop. We thank you all for supporting free and independent media.